I want to go back to the question. We're going to have to park Gaza there for now, but we do need to go back to the question, which the young people who fed into this debate have raised, and which you have raised, about apathy. Now, I think I'm paraphrasing you correctly in saying, is the answer to apathy in society more politicisation or less? Are you saying should people get more involved in community enterprises and be away from politics, or is it to become more involved in politics? Is that right?
The depoliticisation would be the community,
yes,
the social enterprises, the popular budgets, but that would be the politicisation.
Okay, all right.
The depoliticisation and the
individualism. Okay. Anna, what is the best way to tackle apathy, do you think?
I think we need to clear up politics a bit more. I think, you know, politics at the moment really isn't delivering for people on Northern Ireland. It's really very much a carve-up job between DUP and Sinn Féin. And we've seen so many policies being stuck in OFM, DFM, racial equality strategy, taking 7 years to be produced and under really huge public pressure. We've seen the childcare strategy being stuck. Again, so many strategies there to help ordinary people in Northern Ireland, and that are really not, that have just been delayed because the two major parties, you know, can agree on it. So I think there needs to be maybe better, more inclusive politics, not the us and them politics, not seeing politics as a zero-sum game. That if one side gets something, that which means then must mean that the other side has lost out. I think we need to do away with that sort of politics. We need to have politics that says we need to look at needs, and if there are needs there, whatever side it is, we need to do the best for the largest number of people.
Sean, you work a lot with young people, and about, I suppose, engaging them, trying to make them enthusiastic about bettering their lives. What do you think is the answer to apathy whenever people, young people, just switch off?
Well, what you were saying there about their perception on what's going on in general in Northern Ireland, it's like a game, and there's no jobs and there's no hope for the future. That is a part of it. But when there is funding, there's anything put in, it's usually for something external. They're not working internally with these kids. And a lot of kids I work with have phenomenal talent, even in the sports, but they don't believe in themselves. They don't even work with that in schools. I done talks for Mary Peters with our future Olympians, hopefuls, and every single one of them told me when they leave Northern Ireland, they don't believe that they're going to do well, because of their perception of who they are. A lot of kids here don't even know who they are, you know. I remember growing up during the Troubles, and when you went into town, if you were in a bar or anything, you know, you got your mates to call you Billy or something, then you were Sean when you were back up the road. So that confusion even. as I said earlier, you need to know who you are. You need to believe in yourself. You can set goals out for a teenager. You can send them for interviews, you can give them job skills. See, if they don't have a belief that they're capable of doing that or carrying it through, they won't turn up or they won't do a good job or they won't get the interview. It's as simple as that. The foundation of human potential is built on belief systems. And we need to put programs together. There are some great programs out there at the minute, but we need to emphasise this. Because if you're working on the content of the people...
Are we feeling at home? Are we feeling at school to give children these belief systems?
Yeah, a lot of parents need educated in it as well, because you can do your best with a child in school, but if they're going home in their external environment, it's different. And, you know, maybe the parents don't work, or they're telling them, you know, you're like me, you're stupid. I hear that from a lot of children. Their parents always told them they were stupid. You know, you're just like me. You know, you do what your dad does. Children, I remember doing a talk, I think I was saying to you earlier, a couple of years ago in the Irish-speaking school at Beechmouth, and I asked every first-year class coming in, hands up who can go into medicine or law here when you leave school, and I didn't get a hand the whole day. And he says, why not? He says, we're not smart enough. He says, most of you speak 3 or 4 languages. You're sitting there telling me you're not smart enough. You can be and do anything you want in this life, but you have to believe it. You have to go to the origin and install those beliefs. And we need to do that if we want to change Northern Ireland. If you want to change any country, you have to change the mind of the people. And it starts with the children, and it starts in the schools, and it's taken into the homes.
It's giving them aspirations and hopes too, really, isn't it? Telling them that they can do anything they want to do. Yeah.
Julianne, I mean, how do you motivate young people in particular to perhaps become more involved with their community? As you say, you came late to the role. You weren't involved in any kind of community activism at all. So how do you engage people?
Well, I find that at the minute, like, apathy and avoidance seem to go hand in hand, although they're different by definition. A lot of people who experience apathy don't necessarily tend to seek support and keep themselves closed almost. So I find that in order to break that cycle and to break through, you need to bring the support to them, whether that's at the local community through social media or even at the doorstep, you know, with an outreach, community outreach. So it's empowering the likes of the voluntary and the community sector to do an outreach and come out and reach within the community. For example, in my ward, it was established that educational underachievement within the area, and a lot of people had left school, a lot of young people had left school, and they didn't have any of their basic qualifications, and therefore weren't able to go into full-time employment, to kind of fill into that same cycle of, you know, generational unemployment with no aspirations or ambitions. So I kind of looked at how we could do this. I was absolutely astonished to find out that there was organisations within the community, not necessarily in the heart of a particular community, but in the North Belfast area, that specifically deal with NEETs, and yet there was no bridge between this community and this organisation. So I'd been doing a network, and done an awful lot of networking, and brought them in and got them interlinked so that they're now working in cooperation and in partnership, and that's something that's launched within the community now, where there's a NEETs process.
What do you mean, NEETs, not people who are not in employment, education
or training?
Okay.
Yeah, the beauty of it is it's not just necessarily directed at those 16 to 24, which we class as young people. It's extended to the wider community, so also adults. I mean, I believe education belongs to everyone, so we need to be promoted for all ages throughout society. But this particular community was suffering with it, and the rates of unemployment were extremely high. So this has come in, and initially I was met with a bit of hostility, because people didn't want to work with people outside the community. So when it came in and it was working within the community centre, and there was an outreach development officer there for employment liaison, was there, it brought people more, you know, into the centre. But older ones, I found, I actually got it. I mean, younger ones were more receptive, and younger ones wanted to participate. It was something new, it was exciting, and they were needing the change. Where it's harder to change the attitudes of older people, but personally, in my opinion, and in my experience. But I feel that success breeds interest as well. So when they're able to see those people who are brave enough to come out and avail of the support, then they're seeing the success of them coming through training, education, and finally employment. And that's circulating by word of mouth throughout the community, and then people are coming to you and saying, where can I go to get this, or where can I go to get that, you know. So it's great.
Stephen, I mean, the questioner was asking about what sort of initiatives, you know, something that's going to come from Stormont or something that will come out of your own city council that could try and break down some of this apathy and get people, young people particularly, more engaged, more involved with their communities, building their communities?
Well, one of the things, just speaking about this area, one of the things that we do have in this area up here is a very, very much there's a sense of community, which I think a lot of our parts of the city don't have. There's a real sense of community in the Upper Springfield, and that manifests itself in events that you're going to see out here on Friday. The big sort of fun day and family day that we'll have out here, events that we have at Christmas, events that we have at Halloween. And I think over the last number of years, we've built upon them. Now, they're only that size in the overall scheme of things. And one of the big things about education, I sit on a few different boards and bodies, and one of the things I actually found one day that I was actually quite startled at is that kids only pick up 20% of their education in school. The other 80% of it is picked up through your home, through your parents, and the environment in which you live. And that all incorporates into massive levels of deprivation in this area, because one of the things that we do in this area when we're looking at it is we actually just don't take poverty as a given. We break it down and say, why has this area, an area like Shankill on Lower Newton Arch Road, been consistently the most depraved since our formation? And you break it down to things like educational attainment, employment, diet, a range of different things. And what I try and do, and what we try and do as a party locally, is go in and tackle them locally. There's issues in there like fuel poverty, and I don't think it's enough to just turn around and say, well, we'll try and do this, we'll do that. We have to actually start doing stuff. So what we're doing in this area, and one of the questions there as well is about the amount of schools and stuff that's closed in this area over the last number of years. They've closed in this area because parents start taking their kids. There's an Irish school opened up down there, which is buzzing, which is thriving, and parents are taking their kids out. So St Bernard, that's closed because there wasn't numbers. The school over in Moyard closed because there wasn't numbers. Gordon and Mona Secondary School changed into St Gerard because there wasn't numbers. There used to be, I think, four different secondary schools in this area. There was Gordon and Mona, St Thomas's, St Peter's and St Paul's, and now they're down to one. And that's because of demographic changes. People have moved and have moved on. Families aren't as big. So the stuff around apathy, I think that everything we do, there's a thing I've been working with a group down in the city centre called PPR, Practice and Participation of Rigs, and they were talking about, their issue to me was around long-term unemployment. It was people, council create jobs, they have a big investment strategy, and that investment strategy, when we went and asked the question, I did a Freedom of Information request, and asked how is that impacting upon long-term unemployed in Belfast, and I think out of it all, two people in Belfast and BT12 got a job out of it. And it always takes me back to North, just a wee finishing point around apathy. A number of years ago, we had, when the Titanic was being built, the Titanic building, we had somebody who was seconded out of council, and they got a job in this new Titanic, they were working on the Titanic, and they came in to debrief, I remember Jim, I think you were chairing a meeting, they came in to chair a meeting that we were having at the local integrated neighbourhood partnership as it was then, and the girl, and looking back now, we actually should have thrown her out of the room, or metaphorically, she more or less winked and says, look, if you work for me and click for me here, I can get you a few jobs as cleaners in there. I can get people from this area a few jobs cleaning the toilets or maybe in the catering industry. And we shouldn't be selling for that. We should have chased her. And one of the things that we did afterwards, I think it was about 2 years ago, there's a new big E3 complex open down the Springfield Road. And they specialise in emerging industries around wind turbines, all renewable energies and all this type of jobs that are going to be coming here. And I personally invited every single secondary and grammar school in West Belfast to come down and visit it, to get a tour of it, to bring their careers teachers down and to see what they had on offer. And only one school in the whole of West Belfast, which was College of Fiercia, actually turned up on day. And we actually invited people, parents to come down as well, so the parents would get this was available. So there is a big massive issue with apathy in this area. There's a big massive issue with apathy across the city and beyond. And you're right, one of the things, that we just did a recent survey in this area on fuel poverty. And one of the things at the end of it, we asked people in this area where you were of the services, and upwards of 80%, at least 80% of the people in this area didn't know that there was certain community centres, youth provision, suicide awareness, counselling. They didn't know it was there. So even in the area that has all those highest levels of harm and the indicators towards poverty, people in Ballymurphy don't know that the services are there.
All
we need to fix that.
Let's take it out to the floor. I'll come back round to you. Yes, in the pinky T-shirt.
It was just a question for Sean. At the start of her, I'm saying about the depression and stuff. Do you not think it's better to get them more to the doorsteps, like drop-ins and stuff, like try and get the money to bring it closer? Cause to me, if I was depressed and stuff, I wouldn't want to go looking for it. I'd want it to be here instead of going. Like, I know a lot of people that wouldn't go in the town. They wouldn't go away from the house for it.
So but more
drop-ins, the
local,
top of the road or
yeah,
closer to the doorsteps,
yeah.
The what going to it?
What do you think, Sean?
Yes, getting especially males, getting males to go to anything like that. Yeah, I have a clinic in the town and I work with a specialised in irrational behaviour, self-harming, drugs. And it's not just kids in West Belfast, business owners. I had actually a couple of children who were phenomenal at sport caught on taking cocaine recently. And I asked them why, and they say it's for confidence. Yeah, so it's back to what I was speaking about earlier. Installing that confidence. Everybody needs that. They feel safe. They feel strong in life. The drop-in centres, again, most men won't admit that they're having suicidal thoughts. Or it's not as bad now. Years ago, I remember doing an article in the Andy Town News about it, a page. It was just after my brother died, about a year. And it was on symptoms of depression, so that you know you're suffering it and what stage of depression, or somebody in your family. And the amount of people who I had boxed with and doormen and all I knew actually phoned me up and says, do you know much about that? Because I think that's what I have. A lot of people don't even know they're suffering depression. And then they'll maybe confide in a close friend who'll say to them, look, I'll take you out for a pint, you'll be okay. It's like a cancer of the brain. See, when it gets to the neurotic stage, they will do it. Yeah. So And there can't be enough of these things, but again, it's how do you motivate somebody to go into that? You know, as I know people who told me they wouldn't like to be seen walking in the door of a suicide awareness. They wouldn't be seen getting into it. So we need to look at those issues.
Julianne, you want to come in on that?
Yeah, I wanted to talk on that a wee bit, actually, because I suffered depression. I was a self-harmer throughout secondary school, and I was absolutely mortified and wouldn't have went towards a school counsellor, which was there. There was always a school counsellor available, but I would never have went because people knew why you were going in or your business was someone else's at that point and it was never your own. It wasn't private. But I feel that in terms of the education, we should be bringing in these outside independent bodies such as the likes of FASA or PIPS and bringing them into schools from early age, particularly when people first come into secondary school. It's probably one of the most biggest transitions in a young person's life, coming from primary school to secondary school, and we should have these independent bodies coming in and doing workshops around these. I mean, our educators need to take more of a responsibility about the mental health and wellbeing of our young people. And if something like that had been in, I mean, it's great having a poster around a school, you know, but if you have those same faces, those professional bodies coming in and talking about it open and freely, because there is kind of like this hidden conversation or voiceless conversation, we would have a conversation about it, but it would be lost for the words that I'm looking for, but it's almost like a silent conversation. It's not carried out.
Thank you. I have a question for the entire panel on apathy there. I mean, just recently we've seen the Assembly Executive agree £78 million in budget cuts with a further £87 million down the line. Already last year there, the Sinn Féin Education Minister, John O'Dowd, and the Alliance Minister for Dáil, Stephen Farry, cut the bottom two brackets of EMA. And all this comes on top of the staggering amount of young people who are unemployed. I think it's nearly at 1 in 4 at this stage. While at the same time, all 5 of the executive parties are in favour of cutting corporation tax for the super rich. And my question is this, is it any wonder that young people are apathetic when they see all 5 of the major parties in Stormont siding with big business by implementing the Tories' cuts and driving ordinary people's lives into the ground with nothing but minor opposition?
Okay. Anna, your colleague Stephen Farry was mentioned there cutting the education maintenance allowance.
Well, I think the Sunny was quite a lot of consultation on cutting of that. What he wanted to do was to really prioritise needs, to give more to those who need it rather than many, who should not be getting it, and walk away with whatever, £40 a week and maybe going drinking rather than buying books or whatever. Certainly I think he had put a lot of thought into it before he acted. And I quite agree with you, all these cuts are going just to have a very negative effect on higher education and training for Northern Ireland. And it is very important that we build up that skill base in Northern Ireland. We've always talked about bringing investors in, and recently I think there was a survey just out about our employers and companies saying we need many, many skills here that we don't have the people to do it, and for our economy to grow, for young people to have jobs and promotions and better prospect in the career, we need to build that economic base. I don't believe that really cutting corporation tax is going to be the be-all and end-all. Really, many large companies, they will be very happy to take the tax cuts. We need to have that very strong economy if we're going to cut that corporation tax to be able to rebalance our economy, to be able to grow more third sector, for example. We're far too big a civil service here in Northern Ireland, public services, and we need to grow the third sector to be able to give more opportunities for our young people.
Stephen, can I ask you to come in? Because, as the questioner said, all of the parties in the executive are supporting their official policy is to support the cuts, or the cut in corporation tax. But as you yourself just said a few minutes ago, whenever there's job creation, it's often not going to people in disadvantaged communities or to those who are long-term unemployed. it's the jobs seem to swill around the same people.
Well, I think one of the big issues we have around job creation in West Belfast is, well, there's a range of reasons. We don't have any real heavy or hard industry in West Belfast. Never really did. And whenever we did, people from this area weren't allowed into it. I used to live down beside Mackey's down in the Springfield Road. And I can remember my whole life growing up was this sense of living here. My dad went on the brew. And men coming in their hundreds and thousands, walking past our door every day and walking home at night. And my dad had never got a job in there because of his religion. That was the bottom line. I think, thankfully, those days in their entirety are behind us. I'm not prepared, and I know most people in this area are not prepared to be a second-class citizen any longer. And we want to have real and proper jobs. Sometimes what you get in around the issue of job creation, I think there was, at the last count, there was a meeting that was held around an intervention project in West Belfast, I think, last year. And it was between 16 and 18 different organisations saying that they were delivering job creation training packages in West Belfast. And some of them we had never heard of. Some of them were just in saying, oh, we deliver it. They tick a box that they're working in disadvantaged areas. Our party's name is very simple. This, around education, around schools, around education, attainment, around job provision, it needs to be going where it needs to be going. It needs to be coming into the areas that have been affected most by intergenerational unemployment and there's never been any factories up in here. We have an industrial estate up behind us. And I don't know what's in it now. Now there's nothing in it. Well, they come and go because they get grants.
But what can the parties do? I mean, you know, Martin McGuinness has been on as many trade missions as Peter Robinson. In fact, they're always on them together. But, you know, is there job creation flowing from that into West Belfast or into your constituency in Old Park? I mean, are you seeing... I'm writing scripts for another 50 jobs, another 100 jobs have been announced today, but they're not coming here. So are the parties failing, is Sinn Féin failing to deliver on the doorsteps for their own disadvantaged communities?
Well, I would go into them here and say, any politician goes in here and says that our party's doing everything that's on the tin is telling lies. I know and accept that that we as a party aren't delivering 100% what we want to deliver. I would love to be announcing today or tomorrow a new factory in West Belfast. I would love to be announcing hundreds of jobs. But the reality is, I don't really bother, to be honest with you, into that high-end type of, you know, bringing jobs. But I do speak to people who go on some of the trade missions. And the bottom line is that they say that they don't want to come into West Belfast. That's a reality. Like we had last week, and people in this room will know this exactly, we did a story last week in the Amherst Town News about... a suspected heroin kit being found over in one of the schools that was being knocked down in the area. We fought for 2 years to get it knocked down. Heroin was found in it, and it was demolition started on the next day. Now, that's a big failing by the diocese who looked after it. But one of the things about it, UTV actually wanted to do a story. Now, they're obviously only doing a story, and they're doing their job. The lead story in the Friday Night's News was heroin in West Belfast. And yet you have all this positive stuff this week. You have... fail on all week. I haven't seen, and maybe I'm mistaken, but I haven't seen UTV or BBC commenting on thirds of the people being in boys' zone, thirds of the people being in the park on Saturday. There's the crowd here, the crowd in Clonard Monastery last night. They don't do it. There's always a negative portrayal of especially North and West Belfast, and East Belfast is more so to the fore now because of racism that's there. So I think an awful lot of...
it's always you that she breaks in on. Have you noticed that? She's trying to tell you something.
Well. So that's the bottom line. I think we do need to do more to get investment in. I do know that Paul Maskey's MP is out. He is out actively trying. He's never away from, you know, where he needs to be going to try and get investment into West Belfast. But the reality is, it's not coming.
Okay.
And we have to do better.
There are a couple of hands. This lady, yes. There's a microphone for you there.
The question of confidence and self-belief within the context of Northern Ireland, and my thoughts on it are, since the Good Friday Agreement, we've been moving toward what you call a normal society, and we're trying to live within the context of a normal society. And I don't think we've given recognition to post-traumatic stress of the conflict pre that, but I mean the conflict or post-traumatic stress for both communities, for the mental health, depression, I don't think we've addressed that. And so I'd just like the panel to... What's their opinion on that? What's their consideration on that there? And should there be more emphasis put on that as a society that we, when we look at ourselves as a community, if you want to say within the UK, we need to look at ourselves within that context.
Okay. Sean, you're the man who works with the mind mostly, so what's your response to this issue?
I think there is stuff put in place for people. I worked at years ago, Tarn Isle used to have something for our side of the community, people with post-traumatic stress disorder due to the troubles, and the families as well, because you had a lot of children growing up without a parent. And we again had this discussion about, it was more on the sporting side, where I was saying a lot of guys I box with who were internationals took their own life because there was nothing put in place to take them out of their sport. So their whole life had been this, dedicated to doing one thing, and they got all their basic human needs from it, and then suddenly it's not there. And we have a lot of people who lived through the troubles, and that was their world, and then suddenly it's not there. And they don't know where they fit in the community. Again, it's back to knowing who you are and where you want to go next in your life, because you have to keep moving towards things. If there's no goals set out, you look at us as children when we're growing up, your goals are set out by your parents, then they're set out by your teachers, and then if you get sometimes you go into the workplace, there's goals set out for you. If there's nothing set out for you to strive towards to help you to grow as an individual, physically or psychologically, apathy will set in. Human beings, because of the way the mind's programmed, we're pleasure seekers, and we all become naturally lazy at certain times in our life. If there's nothing to work towards, if there's no feeling towards whatever you're setting out, and this is where people start to get anxiety, it can turn into depression. You need to be moving towards something in your life. You won't get out of bed in the morning unless you think, a typical example, a teenager on a Saturday morning, and you shout, get out of your bed and tidy your room. There's no feeling in the nervous system. Don't move. If you shout, your friends are at the door, there's a score away into the town. Suddenly, the nervous system comes alive. You need something. Everybody needs something. That feeling out there in front, the move towards it. If you don't, you become like stagnant water. You gather dirt, bacteria. You need to keep moving forward, and you have to keep. If something's not growing, it's dying. And a lot of people out there are dying inside their own homes. That's my perception on it. What I do.
Would you like to come back on that?
Again,
are we a traumatised society, you mean? What do you think, Sean?
Again, my own perception that the media has a lot to do with that. People believe everything they read and everything they hear in the news, and that's all they talk about.
Are you trying to say it's my fault?
The media does focus on the negative, and that's what sells papers, people like that. Even that group I spoke to from Mary Peters, there was a guy there who he used to be a journalist. I think he just helps people who are in trouble with the media now get out of trouble. I can't remember his name. But he was giving a talk to all the young athletes, and he says, when you go abroad and you're up there and you're in the eye of the media, he says, I will be on your Twitter and I will be on your Facebook. And when you step out of line, you will be on the front page. If you're caught with drugs, if you're being an ass when you're taking off your clothes, he says, I will be your best friend until you step out of line, because that's my job in the media. He says, that's what sells the papers. So I don't read papers personally. I don't watch much TV. But program and hypnosis is built on repetitive suggestion over and over again to program people. And, if you're listening to this, if you're reading this every day, you're being programmed. You're programming your belief system. So you'll see you'll see the world is
I'm going to be conscious of the time. We're coming up to 3:30. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask, I know you're keen to come in with a couple, a sentence, if you have a...
I was just, in light of, the controversy around, equal marriage and the right to get blood and things like that, and like the Pride march last weekend, which didn't seem to show much politicisation amongst especially young LGBT people. I was wondering, for the panel in general, but Julianne in particular, what their vision was for politicising young LGBT people and giving that sort of a political character.
Okay. Julianne, I'm just going to let you answer that because we are getting up to our time, so if you could pick that up, please.
What do you mean in terms of drawing LGBT people into politics, is it, or...? To be honest with you, the Pride Parade has come very commercial, and there's a lot of people that don't understand what it is, and I'm speaking here, taking my political hat off and speaking as an LGBT person. You know, it's certainly been, well, it's been now very commercial rather than the actual message being sent home. But in terms of drawing people in, I know that the council, particularly the Lord Mayor, Nicola Mallon, I mean, and before that it was Gavin Robinson and Niall as well, who brought people in to the City Council and opened it up, you know, to celebrate the diversity of it. And Maisín, quite recently, done the celebration of the diversity of Belfast, included the LGBT people. And quite significantly, we've seen Sinn Féin at the front of the parade. And this year, quite notably, there was a lot of political presence.
Alliance,
now, the PUP, we decided to stand at the side rather than actually participate in the parade, but we were there and supporting it. And I think in terms of drawing people in so that they're not frightened of the political aspect of it, you know, where politics is a cold shoulder, basically, for LGBT people. So to see such a big political presence there, whether it seems commercial or advertised or not, but it lets me know that support's there, and it's certainly welcome. But as an overall, I would agree that the parades became very commercial.
Okay. What I'm going to do is just... Okay, yes, you've had your hand up. Again, very, very briefly, and then the chap at the back, and that's it. So, yes, we're starting with the mic at the back, and then coming forward. Take this guy first, and then the guy in the green.
Yeah, it was just on the issue of Pride. I mean, I agree with Julianne there. You know, over the past few years, it has been entirely depoliticised. You know, it's became about advertising nightclubs, advertising, you know, various products. I mean, myself, I was on the Socialist Party contingent on the Pride Parade, and, you know, we were behind, you know, it's a positive thing, but, you know, stuck behind a lorry advertising sexual health home testing kits. You know, it's just reflective that the majority of the parade now is about this. But the true spirit of Pride is, and the reason it existed in the first place, was as a political statement. It wasn't about, oh, we're here, we're gay, we're going to have a parade every year. It was about the fact that we are gay people, we are being oppressed, and we're going to have this march, this demonstration of how many people there are, demonstration of solidarity from the unions throughout the streets. And it's something that needs to be reclaimed.
You'd
with
like
that,
get,
you know, with all
the
recent controversies with, you know, yeah, the likes of Asher's Bakery, equal marriage, and the massive increase in homophobic attacks, which are coming along with racist attacks. Which...
Can we take the guy in the green top?
Yep, I come in late, so it's maybe been covered. Can I ask Julianne, why did the PUP stand on the side for issues such as Pride in Gaza? Can I ask why they do, and then can I ask you personally why you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in terms of the PUP and the direction of LGBT issues, it's myself that heads that up, and I've been dedicated for the equality issues there around LGBT people. And I suppose really that's drafted in my expertise, sitting on the Cara Friend Board of Directors, which is an LGBT charity in town. I was offered an opportunity to walk in the parade and bring the PUP with me, but I decided not to. And the reason I decided not to, I guess, is because it has become so commercialised, and it comes away and steps away from what the true meaning of Pride is. I mean, I'd released a blog myself, and I'd put a statement out there on Facebook, social media, and just said that, you know, Pride to me isn't necessarily about the politics of it all, because our politicians were of the bin since 1982, when it was Dudgeon versus the state, you know, or versus the UK. Where were they then, you know, when it was criminalised, when it was a criminal issue? But for me, it was a personal decision, and I headed up the PUP directive on that, and I've been dedicated for that as the spokesperson for it. So I made that decision that we wouldn't participate in the parade, and instead would stand at the side and offer support, which was...
Okay, I'm going to draw the debate to a close. What I'd like to do, just very briefly, all of you, just in less than a minute, and I'll start first with you, Sean. Just just a bit of a message of hope, something uplifting. We've heard a lot about the negativity, but just a message for today's event, for West Belfast Youth Talks Back.
Just to repeat the message, you know, we all make up part of Northern Ireland. You know, without us, there is no Northern Ireland. So you need to work on yourself an awful lot. If all parts work on themselves, then the whole will be complete. You can't always expect it from other people. Look for the answers, and others are blame. People get into the blame game, which is just a state changer. So you're the hub of the wheel of your life. You know, it has to be strong and centred and balanced. So, and there is, around the community, there's loads of, see a couple of guys here that run organisations, groups, self-progression and in the community, and they're brilliant, but a lot of people aren't using them. You need to use them more and keep growing. That's it. If you're not growing, you're dying inside. So keep moving towards things, setting out new targets for yourself.
Okay. You know. Anna?
Well, I think, Sonny, Northern Ireland has been held back for a long, long time with the troubles. But this is a wonderful country. And everyone's got huge potential here in Northern Ireland to do better. I think the future is bright, but we all need to work together. We need to break down divisions in Northern Ireland. The divisions, the sectarian politics do hold us back, and I think we all need to work more on really reaching out to the other side in breaking down barriers, in working together really for a shared society. I think we can do it.
Okay. Julianne?
Just to summarise, I'm absolutely delighted to have been invited today. I think that more of these debates and discussions need to happen, like listen and learning sessions, particularly with young people. I think there's a responsibility in politicians to bring young people into politics. There is a place for us. Politics belongs to everyone. We are the next generation, so therefore we should have an input into how Northern Ireland, or the Northern Ireland that we want to see. I would welcome anybody that wants to get in contact or wants to speak with regards to youth issues to get in contact. I'd certainly be welcome to come along.
Okay, and finally...
Just on a positive note, I think one of the things that hopefully if people come back here next year, we will see, we're about to start work on a big major clay facility at the front of the Azure Centre. We're about to get a new £1 million pitch into Falls Park. We're looking at sort of a whole lot of major redevelopment, regeneration projects in this Upper Springfield area. It is fail week. It's a 10 of the week or year when we as a community in West Belfast do hang out our brightest colours. We have the marquee that, you know, starts again tomorrow night with Jason Manford with the Wolf Tones in on Friday night, Kaiser Chiefs on Saturday night. I don't know who that band is on Sunday night playing, but it's a time, this is a very positive time for West Belfast, and I would just concentrate on the positive rather than reactive. We as a community in Upper Springfield are a community who is on the up, and I think that's incumbent upon me, and I don't think politics, but the community sector in this area, the people who are working together, the people who are going to deliver and make real meaningful change for the Upper Springfield and areas like it.
Okay, that's it. Thank you very much, all of you, Sean, Anna, Julianne, Stephen. And thanks most of all to you for coming here today and taking part in the debate. And I hope you'll continue to enjoy all the events that are happening this week. So thank you very much.